Founding Father John Adams once said, "Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other." And John Eidsmo, who is the author of the classic book Christianity and the Constitution, has made some comments recently about the morality in today's America. And in fact, he had an interesting article to which we'll link about the contrast between what happened in 2020 with the death of George Floyd with the death of Charlie Kirk in 2025. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. John Eidsmo, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. And again, I'm so appreciative of all your wisdom and scholarship, and your book, Christianity and the Constitution, is so classic. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Jerry, thank you for all you are doing. We've been friends for at least 40 years, and I'm going to be 80 in a few weeks, so I guess we've been friends more than half my life.
Oh, wow.
But anyway, we've worked together in so many things, and you do such a wonderful job of spreading the word to people who need to hear.
You know, by the way, just as a personal note, John, I've actually been working now for Coral Ridge Ministries for 40 years, and that's just almost unheard of in today's milieu. And my wife, about 5 years ago, on our 40th wedding anniversary, which again was 5 years ago, she gave me a gold watch. She said, "Jerry, the ministry's never going to give you a gold watch, so here you go." I've got it right here. Okay. I love it. Okay.
Well, so you never know. They might.
Yeah, oh, then I'll have two. Who knew? Okay. Anyway. Okay. So, the founder said, the quote from John Adams is not unique. I mean, George Washington said religion and morality are indispensable supports. Thomas Jefferson and Gouverneur Morris, who spoke at the Constitution more than any other single person, they all said things along the lines of the way this is going to work if the people are moral, and the way that the people are going to be moral is through voluntary religion. So why don't you go ahead and contrast those two deaths, 2020 and 2025, and it's really the reaction to those two deaths.
Well, the deaths themselves, I mean, both of them are tragic, and I don't mean to be in any way demeaning the personhood of George Floyd as I say this, but he wasn't exactly the kind of person you'd look to as a hero. Yes, he'd had some athletic achievements, and he'd done a few things in music as well, but he was a chronic drug addict and had been involved in the sale of drugs as well. He had a 4-year sentence for armed robbery, and anyway, in contrast to that, to a model citizen like Charlie Kirk, who right from his high school days wanted to do something to change America and did so much to make that happen. And anyway, the contrast between the two persons is substantial. The contrast between the killings, and, you know, there are many different versions of what the police did in regard to George Floyd. We do know that they were called in the scene because he was suspected of passing a $20 counterfeit bill, but at any rate, whether he resisted arrest is not quite clear. He seemed to be on drugs, they thought, and he was a very large man, too, which meant that they had some reason to be concerned about his strength, but and nevertheless, in putting the knee down on him and so on, and holding it for that long, the court found and the prosecutor alleged that this was unnecessary force, and it was wrong. I mean, I accept the jury's verdict that Derek Chauvin, the police officer, and those who abetted him in this, that they were wrong. But the prosecutor did not allege, and the jury never found, that it was intentional. Now, in contrast to that, of course, the defendant here is presumed innocent until proven guilty, but there are good factual reasons to think that this killing was planned, was premeditated, and was in cold blood. So the contrast there. But the main contrast I would make would be in the reaction. The reaction, and I think what was really happening here probably, is that the left was looking for a cause celebre to make this a bloody summer back in 2020. The left immediately took to the streets, some of them well-funded by who knows who, but took to the streets with demonstrations, which were not mostly peaceful. Some of them were peaceful, but We saw $1 to $2 billion of property damage. We saw burnings. We saw lootings. We saw assaults. At least 700 police officers were injured in the process of dealing with the 2020 demonstrators. And a number of people actually died in those demonstrations. That's the reaction of the left. Take to the streets and destroy in a hatred for America. In contrast to that, the reaction of the right to Charlie Kirk's death was an outpouring of sympathy, of support, of turning to God, seeking God's help, preserving and continuing the things that Charlie Kirk had stood for, loving America, loving God. And I don't remember the exact figures, but as I recall, this Turning Point America organization that Charlie Floyd founded and led so well, this organization had about 2,000 chapters at the time of his death. There have been, the last I heard, some 30,000 requests for new chapters.
And even more.
Weeks ago.
Yeah, even more requests.
The point of the matter is that the right reacted in a very orderly way, the left in a very disorderly and violent and hateful way. And I found it so interesting. I watched most of the memorial service on Sunday afternoon a week ago, and what I found most moving at all was hearing Erica Kirk, his wife, a grieving wife, and left with two very small children, and hear her say, "I forgive the man who killed my husband. I forgive him." And, of course, that's what Jesus would have us do. I think that's what Charlie Kirk would have her do. But it was very remarkable that she did it.
That is amazing. I actually happened to hear that statement on the radio when it was happening live, and our grandchildren were in the car, plus my wife, and I said, oh my goodness, folks, we are hearing history being made here. And the contrast, really, at the end of the day, I don't know where George Floyd stood as far as any kind of religious views or whatever, but Charlie Kirk was on fire for Jesus Christ, and that is where the real difference lay in terms of the reactions. You know, one was a non-Christian, anti-Christian in some ways reaction. The other was the positive Christian reaction. And I think, you know, not all the founding fathers were Christian by any means, but a lot more of them were Christian than were given that notion today. And you know about that so well. I mean, you chronicled these things in your classic book, Christianity and the Constitution.
Well, yes. In fact, out of those 55 delegates to the Constitutional Convention, 28 of them belonged to the Episcopal or Anglican or Church of England, which was an Orthodox church in those days. 8 of them were Presbyterians. Those are your Calvinists. 7 were Congregationalists. Those were your New England Puritan types. There were 2 Reformed. There were 2 Lutherans, 2 Methodists, 2 Roman Catholics, 1 whose religious beliefs were not sure of, McClurg of Virginia. He was buried in an Episcopal churchyard, indicating probable church membership, but we don't know that for sure because he didn't write that much. That leaves maybe 3 that you could call skeptics. None of them would be deists, but some would be Unitarians. That's about 6%. So the overwhelming majority of the founding fathers were strong professing Christians.
As some people try to make it out that the founders explicitly in the Constitution went out of their way to not mention God because that was by design. That's what they say, even though it was signed in the year of our Lord. And that's significant, especially since the French Revolution just a few years later said, hey, forget this year of our Lord business. They even changed the calendar years to get away from any kind of Christian influence. Not so the founders of America.
That's absolutely correct. And frankly, I think in the preamble to the Constitution, they should have mentioned God. But for reasons that I don't know, they did not. But they do at the close, as you say that this is being done in this year of our Lord, 1787. And 1787, years in the year of our Lord, is not only a reference to God, it's a reference to Jesus Christ.
But this is also in the 12th year of liberty. And in other words, what they were referring to is this is 11 years after the Declaration of Independence, upon which the Constitution is predicated. And the Declaration mentions God four times. So since the Constitution basically explains how the government is to work, the government being explained, its raison d'etre, or whatever however you say that, in the Declaration of Independence, I don't see the problem. I see these two documents as you know, they're companion documents.
They certainly are companion documents. And in fact, you could put it this way. The Declaration establishes the nation. We became a nation on the July 4th or July 3rd, whichever you wanted to do. We became a nation when the Declaration was signed in 1776. We got our form of government when the Constitution was ratified, drafted in 1787, and finally ratified by the 13th state in, I believe, 89. And so one is the nation, one is the government. Another point you might make here is that the Declaration sets forth the ideals on which the nation is founded. The Constitution sets forth a practical means of government by which we can put those ideals into effect in a society of imperfect people like you and me. So yes, the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence do go hand in hand together, and we're coming up on the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence, which is really the 250th birthday of America. And again, we need to remember the basic ideals there. We were founded, according to the Declaration, on the laws of nature and of nature's God. The self-evident truths include that we are created equal, that we are endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights, and obviously created is a reference to the Creator as well. And further, that we put our trust in divine providence, and we appeal to the supreme judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions. So the Declaration clearly references God, as you say, four times. Not only that, but the Declaration sets forth a philosophy of government, and so succinctly it sets it forth. Jefferson was a marvelous writer. In fact, you make just a little anecdote here. There's a committee to draft the Declaration of Independence, and at the committee kind of assumed that the author of the Declaration would be John Adams. But Adams said, "No, Tom, you write it." He said, "For one thing, it needs to be written by a Virginian, not a New Englander. For another, you are popular, I am not. And for a third, you are 10 times the writer I am." And anyway, I think John Adams maybe fancied himself more unpopular than he really was, but his point is well taken. Jefferson was a marvelous writer, and you see the philosophy set forth there, the philosophy that we are established as a nation by the laws of nature and of nature's God, that governments are limited by the fact that they must treat people equally because we are created equally and we are endowed by our Creator with unalienable rights that government must respect, that we establish government to secure these rights, not to grant them, only to secure the rights that God has granted. And when government becomes destructive of those ends, then it is the right and duty of the people to alter or abolish that government and replace it with another. I should have added one thing else. Government is to be by the consent of the governed. So that's the philosophy on which the nation is built. And the Constitution reflects that philosophy as well, because what we're dealing with in the Constitution is how do we put these things into effect? James Madison, the man who some people call the father of the Constitution.
And just so you know, we have about 20 seconds to wrap up. Go ahead, sir.
He said that we need to give government enough power to govern effectively, but restrain its power so it does not become tyrannical and oppressive. Read his full statement in Federalist Number 51.
Yep, and they certainly believe man was sinful, and therefore they divided power. Morallaw.org for more information. John Eidsmo, thanks so much for being with us. All the best.
And thank you, Jerry. God's best to you.